Carl Newman is the de facto leader of our guest today, the New Pornographers, but by no means the only creative center in the band. Dan Behar, who has his own other band, Destroyer, also contributes, as does Nico Case, who sings with the New Pornographers when she is not on her own solo tour. We'll hear all of those people in concert and talk with Carl Newman today. And I began our conversation by asking him about the process of putting together this new album, Challengers.
Well, on this record, we pretty much made a demo album. I'm living in Brooklyn now, and I went to the studio where we did most of it, Seaside Lounge, and I recorded a ton of demos. And Dan was in Spain, and he sent 3 demos. And then we sent those off to the rest of the band and said, acquaint yourself with this music, because we're going to get together, and we're going to practice it, and we're going to start recording it. And that was pretty much the birth of Challengers. Which I wanted to make an effective use of time on this record, just because we're all kind of scattered. So we just had to be very focused. Like, let's not screw around here. When we get together, let's work. Let's not play for half an hour and then smoke and drink coffee for an hour and a half.
And that's been what's happened when you're all in the same place.
Well, it's like anybody who's got too much time.
Right.
You waste it.
Right. A lot of people are calling this a mellower album. Maybe because of, I'm not exactly sure, but maybe because of the first track. Do you see it that way?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a mellower album, but Twin Cinema was a mellower album, the Electric Version and so on. I mean, we started out as this really hyper band, and you don't want to keep doing that.
Well, that said, I wanted to, maybe we can go to the stage and hear the live version of My Rights Versus Yours, which I have to tell you, I listened to this song over and over and over, and what I get from it is something like Good Vibrations, a little teenage symphony. There's different parts to it, the way they...
Well, it's definitely got the fake cello sounding guitar, which Todd Fancy played, and I thought was really awesome, because I thought it really... It just really drove the song in a great way.
But also the way the form, you talk about writing more things that are more than just one thing in a song, one part. And this has, a couple of gorgeous parts.
Yes, I'm definitely guilty of, that's my songwriting style. I mean, I think it's definitely influenced by, Brian Wilson. And like people like Burt Bacharach and people like Jimmy Webb. Just trying to write these songs that mess around with the pop song form and still sound like essentially upbeat pop songs, but you can't tell what the verses or what the chorus is, and just when you think another part comes in that turns out is the chorus, or sometimes the chorus doesn't come till the very end. It's just an interesting way of writing. Maybe not the most commercial way of writing, but it's interesting to me.
Do you sometimes challenge yourself what you can do vocally with a song? You certainly seem to in this one. It leaps.
Usually I don't like to challenge myself. If I can't sing something well, I'll give it to Nico or Catherine and say, you can do this.
All right, let's go to the stage with New Pornographers, our guests, and this is My Rights Versus Yours.
The codes on every wall, inflections carved, deepest lakes and darkest stars. Remember, we were the volunteers. Do codes do this and nothing more. From the heights.
Live on stage, New Pornographers on the Cafe with My Rights Versus Yours, one of the new songs. Well, the title track, Challengers, is I love this song, and it's one you wrote. Is it Nico or
Nico singing.
Yeah. Great song. What was? Tell me how this one came about. Wrote it for her?
No, I actually wrote it for the girl who became my wife a couple months ago. It's essentially just the story of the night we first started hanging around and discovered we really liked each other, you know, which obviously was a night that stuck into my head. So I just wrote the song about it. It's just about, like, I think it's about that kind of moral conundrum, like, what can you do if you're with somebody else and you suddenly realize you've met this person that might just be the love of your life, and it hits you like a lightning bolt, and you think, well, you can't stop yourself from loving somebody. All you can do is walk away for a while and say, let's meet again and see if this, you know, works out when we're both single. So that's pretty much what that song was about. And yeah, it's pretty much, it's confessional. If it's not confessional enough, I just confess the rest of it.
I think one gets it, and including the moral conundrum, too. It's right there. This is Challengers.
Yes, I know it was late. We were grieving the sun before long. And you live with someone, I live with somebody too. Leave it there. The same.
Oh la, oh la, oh la, oh la.
One of the worst village in play.
Oh la, oh la, oh la.
In the shade of the sun, we rode down. Another vision of us. We are the challengers of the unknown. Be safe,
ola, ola,
be safe.
Ola, ola.
Whatever the mess you are, you're mine.
Ola, ola.
Okay.
Ola, 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 ola.
Challengers Live from New Pornographers. We're getting a chance to talk with Carl Newman about the songs as we hear live versions today of music from Challengers. You moved to New York City.
Yeah.
You did that a while ago. Is it a coincidence that there are a couple songs about New York City? Because one of them's not even yours, I guess, Dan's.
Yeah, it's Dan. Which I found out, I mean, it should have been obvious to me, but I found out it was essentially kind of written for me. Like, I think he approached the song. It wasn't like he had this song lying around and said, here, this is for the New Pornographers. Like, he wrote it very specifically for us. And he knew that I, you know, was living in New York. And so it was kind of, you know, this New York song, I think, in his surreal way, writing about me going to New York. What was he saying? Or something about, you know, a song about don't let the big city chew you up and spit you out. I don't know.
Right. And it even has kind of a Lou Reed vibe to parts of it, too.
Yeah, definitely. And this... The corner, Bleecker and Broadway, is the nearest corner to the old Matador offices. So that was kind of a conceptually perfect corner to choose. And when Matador, of course, everybody at Matador fell in love with that song immediately because they recognized the reference. And when they first heard the album, I think it was either days before they left those offices or just days after they left them. So it must have seemed extra poignant to them, all unintentional.
This is Myriad Harbor.
Took a train.
Who cares? You always end up in the city.
I set the car, look up for once, see
just how the sun sets in the sky.
I said to John, do you think the girls here
ever wonder how they got so pretty?
How well I do.
Look out upon the Myriad Harbor.
All the boys with their homemade microphones,
a very interesting sound.
All the girls falling to ruin, dropping out of school, breaking daddy's heart
just to hang around.
I walked into the local record store and asked for an American music anthology. Thank you.
Myriad Harbor live on stage from New Pornographers, and we're talking with Carl Newman about that song, which is not one he wrote on it, one that Dan Bahar, who is out with the band now, and just he's got a couple on here that are nice tunes indeed. Mm-hmm. I want to talk a little bit about, you have such a rock critic's kind of take on music. There's some notes that came along with this. I'm somebody who has always loved liner notes, and I do think they help. But and there's a reference to everything you do. You can say where that came from. Where did you start listening? What was the first things that really captured you?
It was just, you know, what was on the radio and what was around. You know, when I was a little kid, I was watching Monkees reruns, and I always loved songs. And, you know, I remember loving 70s radio, like Crocodile Rock and Billy Don't Be a Hero, when I was, like, literally 4 years old. And, you know, just like any kid growing up, when I was 9 or 10, I loved Kiss. And when I was, like, 12, I loved Cheap Trick. And when I was 14, I loved Queen. And then when I got into my, you know, teen years, around 15 or 16, that's when my mind just really opened up to all of the music. And I realized there was so much music out there, and I became obsessed with REM and, you know, just all the Paisley Underground bands, just everything that was going on. I was just wanted to soak up all the music. And, you know, then I got into the Pixies, and a few years later, I started playing music. I didn't pick up a guitar until I was 18. Like, I still approach everything from like a fanboy point of view, and it's really hard for me to fathom that I'm now like the person that fanboys walk up to, and sometimes that really touches me. Like, sometimes, you know, you don't want to talk to people that much, but sometimes after a show and I see three kind of dorky, excited, like 18-year-old guys just wanting to talk about music, like, I see myself and I almost want to hug them. And go, you know, things will get better, you know. Things turned around for me. Look at me.
Well, I'd love to have you comment on the phenomenon of indie rock, because it is, to me, where I'm sitting, it's become almost meaningless in so many ways.
Well, because so much indie rock has hit the mainstream.
Yeah.
You know, like especially 2007. It's like 2007 was the year indie rock broke. Like, you know, Shins and Arcade Fire were number two. Modest Mouse is number one. I mean, Spoon went to top 10. And Spoon are one of my favorite bands in the world, but I never would have called them as a band that would ever hit the top 10, you know? And it's actually a weird climate, because it's like people expect so much of us. I guess because we're like people almost think, like, oh, you're next in line to hit the top 10. And you go, well, it's hard to hit the top 10, you know? Just because we're a popular indie rock band doesn't mean we're going to explode into the mainstream. It's a weird time to be playing music and see all these people that are your peers who are just full on rock stars. It's just really odd.
Well, it's interesting because people also point to people like Spoon and go, why aren't they bigger than they are?
Well, they can't say that for long.
Yeah, and that's true.
I wouldn't be surprised if this record goes gold. So
yeah. But the only thing that would hold it going gold is the fact that the record business has gone to hell. That would be the only reason why it wouldn't get the sales. It probably should have at some point.
But the record business, the major label record business, has kind of gone to hell. But the indie rock business hasn't. I mean, whenever something doesn't do well, they always blame it on the, you know, the
right.
business. So everything's declining. But, you know, there are indie rock bands that just had exploded this year in a really weak market, and I think it says something about, you know, the indie labels having some kind of importance, like, because their indie labels are putting out music that people care about, and most of them are putting out records that they really like, whereas major labels are essentially trying to make money, and there's no secret about that. And these people whose only goal is to make money, when they stop making money, they feel like they're being victimized. It's like, well, you never cared about the audience at all, and now, like, the audience has found, like, another way to get music that doesn't involve you, and then you want to find some poor woman in Minnesota and sue her for $2 million just to scare the rest of the world? I mean, that's just evil. It really, I've said it before, when I hear stories like that, it really makes me wish that all the major labels would just crumble into dust.
A lot of what the major labels were about was manufacturing a big hit. Mm-hmm. And if New Pornography has a big hit, it's because people fall in love.
Yeah, it's just organic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not completely organic. Obviously, people are working, but there has to be that spark there, you know? Like, you can't force a song into being a hit, you know? Like, you can't take anything away from the artist. It's just writing their song. And so it's the same thing I feel about licensing your music. You know, people get all up in arms about bands letting their songs be in commercials, and it's like, it doesn't diminish a song because it's in a commercial. I mean, who cares? If all you've got left in life to protest about is bands' use of music and commercials, then you should go join the Peace Corps or something. You know, there's lots of other problems in the world.
Well, let's finish up with a song that probably isn't going to be a hit. maybe just because
which
of its length.
Which one? Oh, yeah,
Unguided.
Definitely. Although Kurt, for some reason, thinks that's the single from the record, which I always thought was curious. Our drummer.
Oh.
I thought, that's so odd that you think that. But I was flattered that he thought that. But.
Well, this you get to stretch out a bit, and it's a great song. This is Unguided. Guided New Pornographers live on the World Cafe, and thanks Carl for coming in. It's refreshing.
No problem. Refreshing
to talk with you, and thanks for the music.
No problem.
Carl Newman, New Pornographers. The new album's called Challengers. We'll be back in a moment here on the World Cafe.